Hello and welcome to Coffee and Uchiokeke. I am Salma Uchiokeke. Today's guest, Owase, is a distinguished Nigerian artist and cultural advocate. Born in 1960, she holds a bachelor's in painting from the University of Nigeria, Nsukka, and a master's in human management. Chinwe's career includes her time as a curator with the National Council for Arts and Culture and active roles on various cultural boards. Her work is featured in and group exhibitions across Nigeria, the US, Canada, and more. Chinwe's work, which forms a narration for identity, representation, and cultural heritage, making her a powerful voice in contemporary Nigerian art. How are you today, Chinwe, and how is Cannes this time of the year in France?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. Good morning. Cannes is very, very, very nice at this time of year. The weather has started cooling down. We're getting over the heat wave of the summer. But it's beautiful.
Wow. Wow. Did you have the autumn?
Yeah, we're entering autumn right now.
Yeah. Okay. I always love that time when all the leaves change color to that lovely burnt orange and fall.
Oh, no, it's not North American autumn. The leaves are still green. It rains a lot. Everything is blooming.
Oh, wow. That would be spring. Okay. Wow. That's interesting. I would really like our listeners to get a sense of you to your innermost being with a simple question. What would be the ideal visual elements you would include in an artwork where you're enjoying a coffee with a loved one?
Representation of the environment with happy lines and swirls, just going up into the air and using shades of blue and purple, which are my happy shades, and splashing it with orange and a few dots of red here and there. But I always try to show the exuberance by using the lines of nature in the best and happiest. I can already see in my mind's eye all these swirls going up on a large canvas.
Wow, I can see a bit of that myself. When you were doing your bachelor's degree, what were your first impressions of Uchiokeke when you met with him on a panel?
Before I entered university, the very first time I met Uchiokeke was on the admission panel. And he appeared very avuncular, eyes twinkling, and his head cocked slightly to one side while he asked his questions. And mind you, at that time, I was only 17. He was one of the people that calmed me down in the interview panel. Then we started school. And that avuncular air diminished slightly. He became stricter. This was where the lecturer came across. But it wasn't he was very strict or insistent in this, that, and the other. He was more of a mentor to us students, showing us what to do, how to handle media, and how to navigate our way through the motifs and stuff. Those were my first impressions. Someone who would pull you in and then straighten you out.
In terms of the mentoring, when you talk about the pulling in and straightening you out, was it a loose kind of mentoring to bring out what you had inside of you vis-a-vis the cost concept?
Yes, it was a loose kind of mentoring. It wasn't very formal or stiffly constructed. No, because from what I saw, he wanted his students to actually be themselves. You had to work, but at the same time, you had to discover. Discovery meant that you had to be observant of what was going on around you. It had to be interpreted in your own way. Everything needed, all the tools for our creativity were there around us. They were in nature. We just needed to break them down to their basic lines.
Very interesting. And probably exciting at that age, at 17, to find that you could really move things in your own direction, take ownership even while you're learning the basic concepts of drawing and design. By the end of the day, it really would be your own input. And I think at that time, and then the students that were there would all come up with completely different, I guess.
In those days, the classes were very small. My class was, initially my class was 12, then one left, and then we were 11. I was left the only female student in the class.
I heard a lot about you with a whole lot of affection. Was it because you were the only female in the class?
I think in a way, but then, even though I was a student, he looked upon me as a daughter of sorts who he could steer in the right direction.
And that's the thing. I think that cascaded down to his good friend and contemporary, Dimas Moko. You became a kind of family name. And I think you were probably quite talented as well. A lot of the attention would have to do with what you have to bring on board.
I actually had to work with Dimas Moko when I was in the National Council for Arts and Culture, because part of my work had to do with researching into traditional and contemporary art and doing quite a lot of archiving and data collecting at that particular time. I met Dimas Moko, and he is an incredible creative, and ended up meeting his daughter, Bofu. We're very good friends.
Quite interesting, the journey. After you graduated and he was no longer in the lecturing position, in what way did your relationship continue?
I wasn't going back to Suka a lot because of the job I was doing. We were still in touch. I remember whenever he had anything to do in Lagos, I would go meet him. A couple of times I brought him over to the director general at that point, the director, Mr. Frankai Dimokwede. And they two, they got along pretty well. And then, of course, we had some of your dad's work in National Collection of Contemporary Art. I remember a couple of times that your mom, the first you came, I remember her words, "Ew, Chiwe, this is you now working."
This is big Chiwe. Having never really think anybody grows up. Talking about that relationship, after my father had stroke, he was in a wheelchair for convenience at that time. His eyes were twinkling when he saw you, I'm telling you. He didn't really react so much to a lot of people, but he hadn't seen you for so long. And when he saw you, he definitely knew you, and he was very pleased to see you. He didn't say anything, but I could see how happy he was.
I sat with him. I remember I was the one who was doing the talking, and your mom was pleased because said, "This is the most activity I have seen with him."
Exactly. It was quite amazing. He was very pleased to see you. Wow. That's quite interesting. Could you please share with us what happened at the 60th birthday party in Lagos and what made it in keeping with what he taught?
I remember us preparing, trying to get everything ready, finding the right center to host him, trying to make sure that he was recognized for his contributions to the art world. We had to think of making a cake. Tyra Odenike and I were given the job to present this big cake. It wasn't just going to be any cake. It was a two-tier cake. We decided we were going to have the baker decorate it with the woolly designs here and there, which we did on the sides of the top of the cake. We tried to simulate his signature and put the UO on top of the cake. I remember that it was done in blue. And when we presented the cake, his face lit up. Like,
it was quite creative. This 60th birthday party, who hosted it?
Oh, we all did. The ex-students.
Oh, that is beautiful. Ooh, all the ex-students, wow. And probably some of the lecturers or just ex-students?
We had a few people from the contemporary art scene in Lagos come to honor him. Yeah, I remember that evening very well. We had great fun. It was an evening of reminiscences. We managed to find music from minstrels and these old music. We all sat around. It was incredible. We all had fun, and it was an evening of reminiscences, remembering all the stuff at school. We each had to say something about Uchokeke, and the theme of the speeches swirled around, what did he teach you? How did he teach you? And the funny thing about it, when you are busy absorbing information, without really receiving strict formal instruction. We each came to the conclusion that, yes, we got the best out of Uchokeke. Did he teach us? No. What didn't he teach us? And the question came back again, did he teach you? Yes. It was a strange dynamic that we had him there, we imbibed from him, but it was not formal.
Now, that spirit of togetherness that was fostered in the Department of Fine and Applied Arts back in those days, I still see it coming up over and over from the old brigades. Definitely, you see when El Anachi has something, you see everybody coming together to support some of your own contemporaries where they've had to do anything. You see people coming to support. Is there any particular reason why you were able to build that kind of relationship amongst yourselves?
The department was small. We looked out for each other. We did things together. The lecturers were very involved with whatever the students were doing. And we didn't just take the department as where you went to school. Uchokeke decided that we had to spruce up the department and came to the department that day with shovels and plants and so on. Do you know lecturers and students? We put our hands together and planted flowers, hedges around the department. We all did it together. That was the togetherness we had. The older students looked out for us, the younger students, and we would have different get-togethers with the lecturers in a less formal environment that actually linked us together and created that togetherness, which has lasted throughout the decades.
Yeah, quite interesting. But most people had finished school and had started carving out a career for themselves when decided to come together and do this. That shows us the far-reaching effect of what people now term as the Nsukka School, how it's the spirit of that movement. What do you think made Uli so special to Uchokeke to promote and make it so influential?
He lived Uli because he discovered it when he was young. In his curiosity, he needed to know the meanings of the lines. And his mother actually told him how they were used as a language, how they told stories, and how each line linked with the other, or each stroke or circle or dot had its own place. He started from mimicking to beginning to creating his own motifs. That it's a living art. In the Uli murals, he actually showed us some of them that incorporated people, bicycles, cars, and then that had the outline of aeroplanes. So that tell the stories of how their lives had progressed. What exciting or sad things happened in their lives within a period of 4 to 8 days, because that was the shelf life of wall paintings.
Wow, 4 to 8 days. What about the body paintings?
The ones on the body lasted for about 8 days to 2 weeks, because it depends on how deep the indigo used was and whether the skin at the time of application was dry.
Yeah. What would you say Uchokeke's legacy is?
Actually putting the stamp of Uli as an evolutionary, making sure that us, his students, understood what our traditional heritage is and pushing it further, making it live. That's his heritage. I have had this argument a couple of times where you have people talking about why are women doing a traditional male form of art. I've had to tell people, listen, the facts that Uchokeke was pushing really doesn't mean that it's male art. It is feminine art. He learned from his mother and he ran with it, but he saw the value of it. He had to make sure that people knew all about it, remembered it.
How do you link this with the natural synthesis movement?
My first encounter with Uli, I was 8 years old. I saw a woman painting designs on this young lady's body, her whole body. I was fascinated. I went close to her to find out. She told me that she was drawing specific patterns on this girl's body. to ward off Iba, malaria.
Apparently,
the young lady had a fever, and part of the cure for the fever, apart from those patterns being drawn on the body, you had to take steam inhalations. I stood there, fascinated with what she was doing. This was during the Nigerian Civil War. After that, and the war ended, I didn't encounter any of that anymore. It went back to the recesses of my memory until Uchokeke was talking about Ulian. Incidentally, our classes used to be more of chats, conversations, and discussions. I actually had to tell him this story, and he sat me down and actually pointed out the magic of, I remember with reverence, the story your dad told me. He said that in the traditional philosophy, the people believed that capturing those basic lines, and the basic lines meant the outer lines, the scales, or the movement left by the movement of a snake, that capturing those basic lines, particular design, you were going to take the strengths that came from that object or animal or in your environment. That is the magic of Uri. By drawing those lines, certain patterns on the body, they believed it helped in healing and well-being, apart from beautification.
Just as the lines were a language on its own, when it's painted on walls, those that would understand, they would know what was being said. He spent all his life researching into that and researching into traditions.
His love for traditions and making sure our traditions didn't become extinct or disappearing to the clouds of history was why he set up the Asele Institute. And he believed that art should be spread around. It shouldn't be located in just one place, which was why the institute is located in Nimo, because he wanted to draw people to the heart of those traditions and culture that they could come and see for themselves and experience it.
Experience that lifestyle as well. His research took him into finding out what was happening in other cultures as well. He spent a lot of time doing comparative analysis with other cultures. And, well, part of the synthesis is to pick things from those cultures. You said he definitely believed in evolution of culture and the importance of arts to cultural evolution.
We also had to look at Chinese and Japanese drawings. Quite a lot of young Chinese artists, they draw their inspiration from the traditional motifs and designs, which was what Uchokeke brought to the Nsukka school.
People would say that his legacy is, apart from this Uli movement, would be to assist people to go into introspection, develop their cultural identity, and get it documented and share it with the world.
Through the creativity, creating current Uli designs, creating current Uli lines, he actually showed us that we shouldn't let go of our culture. We shouldn't let go of those traditions that actually inform what we create. He steered it right to where we actually understood that we did not have to produce works that looked like classical Western art. We had our own way of expression and expressed ourselves best in that way. We had a concentration of doing art history that concentrated on African art with a bias towards traditional art from areas in Nigeria and West Africa, comparative studies and so on. Because you know that traditional art from different ethnic groups might have slight differences, but a lot of similarities. From school, we discovered that we're not all that different. There are artistic and traditional threads that hold all of us together.
It was quite a time to be in the department with this rich tapestry of people from all over. And then the students, the passion of researching back into your traditions, having the freedom to express yourself finally in your own individual way. I think that helped to bond everybody together because it didn't really matter where you were from. You were basically on that same mission of documenting Nigerian and African art and finding ways to move it forward. It was not static.
We had to go a bit far afield and collect design trends from different places and actually look at what the contemporary trends were, because it was then came into vogue and everybody did it and did it to death until a new thing. Oh, this is the direction we're going now. Remember, then Nsukka was still quite a large rural area. The lecturer that used to take us to all these places was Dr. Chika Anyako, because he wanted to keep us in the traditions. When they had any of the masquerading festivals or Yam Festival, or you found out that these people actually used a lot of their traditional designs. We gleaned a lot of information from them. Then we had to look at the traditional textile designs, the woven one. And then even though they were worn, they were garments, some of them appeared wall hangings, which was part of what was taught in the textile department.
I don't know if the students now have of these opportunities that you had at that time. I mean, Nigeria having moved, veered off much from how things used to be, both positively and negatively. I wonder how it is. But I keep seeing things, post-media kind of stuff from the department. And I think that effort has been made to keep up that tradition of how things went on when you were a student in that department as well.
Yes, I'm in touch with at least three of the lecturers there. And they are proud of their Uli heritage. In fact, what they're doing, because we had to learn a bit of that while we're students, what they are doing is actually bringing the CBD or Sibiri, depending on where the art is being practiced, bringing CBD to the fore. It is not far flung from Uli, because the people of Arochu or Hafia, Item, and so on, to practice in CBD, because that is where the overlap in the tradition and culture between them and Cross River and Akwa Ibom State, that's where the overlap in their cultures occur. And then you go a little further up north, you still find that same overlap among the Rikari of Benue State. You find that thread runs right through and there's a connection. What is going on in the department now, I think, is that with technology and the advantages that it brings, students are able to actually research more and find out that which binds us and not which separates us, and use it to express themselves. But it's a part of Uchakete's legacy. That was what he wanted people to do. Make sure that art and traditions live, whichever way you can. It's everybody that is involved in it, or once you catch the bug, you run with it.
And the Fine and Applied, Department of Fine and Applied Arts in Nsukka has continued to be the laboratory and continue to be a beacon for that movement. It's quite amazing. It's really amazing. You are all the pioneers of this movement because you were there at almost the beginning, being one of the earlier students of the department. And I'm sure you feel proud to see what your contributions have evolved over the years. But then I have an interesting question for you. For what legacy would you want to be remembered?
Oh, wow. I want to be remembered as someone who loves art, culture, and tries to practice it. I want to be remembered as who loves nature, sees nature as artistry, not just nature, for part of the environment. And I want to be remembered, which is what I'm trying to work on at the moment. I want to be remembered for actually upholding our folklores, our folk tales, which is a part of our lives. We should not forget the minstrels. We should not forget our traditional tales. These are the things that make us. And this is a part of the artistry. I want to be remembered as a complete artist.
You are already remembered as a complete artist because we watch you from a distance and we see that creativity has never left you. Remember that creativity comes in many different forms. It's a complete lifestyle. And once you get into it, it is completely life-changing. You either have it or you don't. And it will show in every single way. And definitely, you're already a great creative and a great icon for many. I also like that you mentioned the environment because I almost forgot to talk about that. Even though you have mentioned, I've seen how they have evolved over the years into, apart from using materials from the environment, going into recycling materials from the environment. It's quite exciting how the journey has continued to take that department, and that romance with the environment is still very, very key today.
Yes, because in creating a sculpture garden, the garden had to complement the environment and the environment complements the garden. We found that it was of joy to look upon these works of art that grew out of us, grew into the environment to enhance it. All a part of sticking to our traditions as well, because if you think back to what the villages used to be, even though nowadays everybody's waiting for the government to do this, that, or the other, the way the compounds were swept, they were swept patterns. And these patterns changed from time to time. And each compound, whose job it was to sweep the compound clean every morning, had to think of new patterns to actually show off their artistry in sweeping, in keeping the ground, you know?
As small a task as that.
Yes.
Quite interesting.
Yes. And then the way they cleaned the walls. When you come to certain houses in the village, there are stoops that they don't actually bring out seats or chairs or anything else. The chair was for the head of the family or the mother, but it had stoops attached to the outer walls of the house. These had to be polished. Look. All these had to be polished and until they were gleaming. So you have a few designs embedded into them, whether it was shiny stones.
There was always a design embedded in them, even though they were functional. Yeah.
Yes.
It's quite interesting.
These are all the things that we were taught, or, well, not that we were taught as such. And see how we could maintain this in the contemporary environments that we find ourselves. But we actually had to recognize that this was a part of what made us, a part of our creativity.
Thank you so much, Chinwe, for joining us today and the little espresso of history for my father's journey.
Thank you.
Thank you, dear listeners, for joining in. Find us on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. Share our show around. And please leave a kind review.
And see you next time on Coffee and Uchakeke.